Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, welcome again. Here's Saturday in Tucson with Dr. Zara Larson and my broadcast partner, his third time on the show now, Bruce Frankel from New York. How are you today, Bruce?
Hi, how are you, Zara? I'm okay. This isn't a New York accent. This is a head cold, but I'm fine.
All right. You didn't have to divulge that secret, but with that, well, let me a brief introduction. Bruce, of course, we've enjoyed talking about his most recent book called What Should I Do with the Rest of My Life? It spotlights the lives of 12 people who, after age 60, have really gone on to do some really extraordinary things. Not that what they did before that wasn't extraordinary, but this is truly the encore or the kick-up for their other adventures in their lives. I just wanted to mention, too, that Bruce also is co-author of the World War II History's Greatest Conflict in Pictures, which was a New York Times bestseller, and he has also in his background having worked at People Magazine, USA Today, countless other newspapers and magazines before he proceeded to pursue a master's in fine arts and poetry and launch into his own second career here. So, Bruce, one thing you had mentioned in one of our shows, your fascination with the brain and how you're now on this other trajectory of writing and investigation. How is it that that came about?
Well, when I was writing What Should I Do with the Rest of My Life, I noticed early on as I began to look at different people that they share, one of the things that they seemed to share, not every one of them, but most of them, was some engagement in physical activity. So we have Margie Stoll, who became a runner in Nashville at age 60. We had Robbie Iadoluca, who got his PhD at 60 in psychology and went on to do an internship in substance abuse treatment at 70. He walked regularly 2 miles a day and did social dancing at least once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And we had Thomas Dwyer, who was really my poster boy for this. And Thomas began dancing. He had been an intelligence officer in the CIA and the Defense Department for most of his life, and began dancing without any background or any musical training or any physical aptitude in his 50s. He's now 76 and is still a principal dancer for the Liz Lerman Dance Exchange in Washington. And when I was investigating his story in particular, I came across a study that had been done at the Albert Einstein's College of Medicine in New York that was a longitudinal study of about 20 years that looked at about 500 people, a little less than that. And one of the things that they discovered to their surprise when they were doing this study was they found that there was a protection for the brain in general of showing the symptoms of Alzheimer's or dementia for people who were physically active in some way. And an outlier to that group was that social dance done 3 times a week or more seemed to have a very large protective factor, almost inexplicably large. There was a significant decrease in the incidence in dementia for those folks.
Wow, that's astounding. Let me slow you down just real quick for our listeners that may not be familiar on research. The idea of longitudinal study, it means that the researchers followed these people for almost 20 years, correct? And to
correct.
Do that for 500 people, you can imagine the extensiveness of it. And then social dance, you mean they went out dancing with partners or for by themselves? They connected with a dance club?
Correct. They were social dancers, so they went and they danced in a dance club. They went with a partner.
Mm-hmm.
They danced regularly. And I've continued to look at that and am now writing about it. And it's the connection between the brain and dance is truly a fascinating one. But underlying it, you know, what research hasn't really focused that much on the brain and answer, although I'm coming across more, but more and more, almost every day, there are studies that are showing why exercise is so critical for long-term brain health and from the time we're young, but well into advanced age of 70s and 80s, doing physical activity is not just critical, but it can, even if people have been couch potatoes their whole lives, there is a big upside to beginning to do some sort of physical exercise or activity.
And I think your point here, what you're going to take us in the conversation is, I mean, indeed, this whole idea of health and wellness and good nutrition and being active isn't just about, you know, all the body members, our legs, our limbs, you know, being able to be mobile. But you're saying, are you taking us in this path? It really has been known to protect against the degeneration of memory skills. This is talking about the function specifically of the brain.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there are a couple of sides to this. You know, people often think that if they're doing Sudoku or crossword puzzles or, you know, various programs online, that they're, and all that stuff is okay, but in truth, studies don't show that doing crossword puzzles or those things do all that much for the brain. But what we do know from studies is that physical activity has many, many benefits for the brain, and so memory function is one of them. That there are studies that show, for instance, a study in 2007 that showed that after 35 minutes of exercise, when they test vocabulary, new vocabulary in people of any age, they show, I can't remember precisely, but something like a 20% increase in recall as a result of having had exercise. So it has we know that it has a direct effect on memory, and we also know that it does many other important things for us as we age. One of the things that, you know, there's most recently, there's been a fascinating study. I wasn't going to jump to this, but I will now. There was, and then maybe we can backtrack a little.
Please, yes,
give
please.
A little of the background. But there was a study recently released by the University of Illinois, Arthur Kramer at the Beckman Institute there, they've been doing great research for 20 years, and they published a study in February that basically shows that they had subjects who were in their 70s and 80s. They were non-exercisers. And they had them exercise by walking three times a week for 30 minutes or more. They had a control group of people who were just doing it stretching.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what they found was, after 6 months, that the people who were just doing stretching and that sort of exercise, their brains actually shrank. The people who went out and did walking three times a week for 30 minutes, their brains did not shrink.
Wow.
So we know that there is a really, really critical thing that goes on with exercise. We just weren't meant as a species to sit in front of a TV set or in front of a computer screen for hours on end. We know that in evolutionary terms, when going back 10,000 years, man walked an average of 8 miles a day. 8 miles a day. Today, most people don't walk eight blocks a day.
Right.
And, you know, there has to be an effect to that. And so when we start looking for all the reasons why there are increases in dementia and diseases of the neurodegenerative diseases, one of the things that we have to look at is what we're doing with our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's important. It also is an important factor in mood. And there are numerous studies that now show the connection, the direct biological connection between getting sufficient exercise and mood. There was a study done at Duke University, I think it was in 2007 as well, that matched taking Zoloft, a serotonin drug, mm-hmm. against exercise. And guess what they found? At Duke, they found that they were equivalent, that getting, I don't have the figure in front of me, how much exercise, but basically that exercise is as good a mood alteration as many drugs that people take to get elevated mood.
Exactly. That, frankly, this pharmacological approach to life creates a dependency that we don't know what the longer-term ramifications are going to be as well.
Right.
Well, now, tell us, I think you and I had talked earlier at one point, that why is that? What's going on actually with the brain, if you might play scientist for a moment, or
okay,
physiologist?
I'll play. The play is the right word because I'm not a neuroscientist or even much of a scientist, but I have been reading a lot and interviewing and discovering. And just going back a little history, you know, for most of the last 100 or 200 years, people didn't believe the brain could change very much. That basically they believed that you were born with X billion neurons in your brain, and over, from the time you were about 20 or so, your brain was basically in a state of constant free fall. It's degenerating in terms of the numbers of cells and so forth. Over the last 20 years, we know that the scientists have seen, you know, lots of evidence to show that the brain remains vital and can generate new neurons and can reshape itself if it's challenged. And if it's challenged with exercise or novel learning experience and discipline. So that's been a huge revolution. And that's also part of what led me to do the what should I do with the rest of
my life. Exactly, because you thought there must be something going here. These are all people over 60.
Yeah, and I really wanted to find evidence of what science was saying scientifically. Mm-hmm. I wanted to find some proof of it in real life. So that was part of what led me on my journey in that book. You know, going back around to 1995, there is a scientist whose name is Carl Cottman, who was at the University of California, Irvine, who did a long study and looking at the brain and exercise, and he expected to find some big changes, but mostly in the motor sensory areas of the mm-hmm. brain. And what he found was that when they developed the first films, was that there was change in the hippocampus of the brain. And the hippocampus is a small region of the brain that is extremely vulnerable to degenerative disease. It's very important to learning, very important to memory. And what they found was in that area of the brain, exercise sparked sparked neurogenesis.
Okay,
the creation of new neurons could be recruited for learning. And so they began to learn that exercise affected learning at any age. And this is a huge discovery. This is really critical information because, you know, we tend, expressions are, our language is laden with expressions, you know, you can't teach an old dog new tricks or whatever,
right,
that suggest that, you know, you get past a certain point and you shouldn't think about, you know, maybe challenging your brain with learning an instrument or learning a language. And that's the most foolish thing you could do.
Or taking up, you know, within due respect of your fragility of your bones or your other muscles, or taking up snow skiing or taking up, let's go the other way, simply walking.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just to go on this vein for a minute longer, the one of the things early on when I was doing what should I do with the rest of my life that really just jolted me were studies that showed the way in which when people, as they age, start to cut back on the weights of things that they buy, they're actually doing a huge disservice to themselves. So instead of buying a half gallon of milk, people start to buy a quart and then a pint or whatever. They cut down the size. And what they're actually doing is they're programming into their lives a reduction of weight bearing.
Oh.
And they're causing their muscles to lose tone because they're decreasing the demand all the time. And they do it, and people do it all the time in different ways. And it's part of this self-fulfilling thing that we do. And it's why it's so important for our culture to revise its notion of aging, because built into the language of our culture are all these trances that tell us that we're going to weaken.
Right.
We're going to weaken in body and mind.
Yeah.
And then people fulfill them, you know. So whether it's that way, or they don't challenge themselves, or they don't exercise. And, you know, one of the early studies that I came across were studies that showed weight training for the so-called old 70s and 80s. They've discovered over the last 10 or 15 years that muscle mass, while it does, we do lose a lot of muscle mass after we're about 60, we start to lose it rapidly if we don't exercise. But muscle mass can be redeveloped. And it's, you know, so they found in various programs that we can regain muscle mass. And this is critical because, you know, one of the biggest problems as we age is that people fall or they become
right.
They lose their sense of balance,
mm-hmm.
and we can avoid that. But you know, in a cognitive sense, it's exercise is just so critical, and stress is another huge issue, because stress, you know, stress is really bad for the brain. it sends out hormones that basically interfere with memory and interfere with learning. And we've always known that cortisol, or we've known for a long time that cortisol is bad for the heart, and that gets produced by stress. But, you know, exercise does a couple of things. It interferes with it. It blocks some of that cortisol production, so that, you know, we need some cortisol. It is important, but when there's too much of it, it depresses people and it depresses learning. And so that's another very important reason.
Boy, I can so resonate with what you say. My husband is in his mid-50s, and he's been working with a personal trainer now for 3 years. And around him at different times are individuals that this trainer's been working with. A couple gentlemen are in their 80s. And they've been working with Dan for you know, maybe 15, 20 years. And so you're actually right, this strength building and activity. Bruce, before we run out of time, you had also mentioned to me a study actually, though, that relates to youth. So what we're talking about, although it's centric on and your work is above people over 60, but this is equally important for young people, is it not?
Yeah, it's hugely important for young people. I mean, we know just really quickly, one thing that we know is that exercise done to a high level demand creates something called BDNF, which is a growth hormone in the brain. And it's sometimes, John Rady, who's written about this, calls it the miracle grow for the brain. And studies show that, you know, there's a school district in Naperville, Illinois, where they, rather than cutting back physical education, they increased the physical education, physical fitness, really. They didn't de-emphasize, say, sports and emphasize fitness. And scores in that district went way above other districts around them. And they're very, BDNF is really important, and we know that physical demand is important. But also we've learned in recent studies have shown us that they've determined that women who were physically inactive, not active as teenagers, but became active at the age of 30 and age of 50, significantly reduced the odds of cognitive impairment.
Exactly. So the play for women. Well, great. Well, Bruce, unfortunately, we're out of time. We're going to have to pick up this subject at another time again. Bruce Frankel, author of the book, What I Can Do in the Rest of My Life. Thanks a lot for joining us. What should I do with the rest of my life? Thanks for joining us, Bruce.
Thank you.
You bet. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it. Going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, 877-544-2580.